sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today you'll hear the second and final part of the speech given by author Russ Baker at the Treason in America conference in March of 2010 in Pennsylvania. It's only about 5 minutes long, and then you'll hear a more recent interview with Russ Baker on Russia Today on January 17, 2011. And that will be followed by the speech given by Michael Parenti at the How the World Changed After 9/11 conference, given on September 12, 2010, in New York City. And after all of that, I'll tell you about the new date for our snowed-out showing of the movie Deceptions. And now here's a little bit about Russ Baker. He's an award-winning investigative journalist who has written for The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, The New York Times, The Nation, The Los Angeles Times, The Washington Post, The Village Voice, and Esquire, and has served as a contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review. He is the founder of the website whowhatwhy.com, a nonpartisan, nonprofit news website. And so here he is, Russ Baker, talking about his book, Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years.
And so the more I looked into it, I thought, well, I've got to look at the father. And so more than half of Family of Secrets is about George H.W. Bush, a man we knew nothing about, nothing. He was vice president or president. In fact, if you take the two Bushes, for 20 of 28 years of this country's history, one of them was vice president or president. That has never happened before in the history of the republic. So I looked at the father, and I discovered he'd had a secret life. I wondered why they named him CIA director in 1976. At the height of investigations of the CIA, of the Kennedy assassination and other things, a guy who seemed like kind of a goofball, frankly, and that they put him in charge of this agency. Out of all the people he could take, they said he was a neophyte. And what I discovered was he wasn't. He was CIA through and through. He had been his entire life. That's one of the revelations of Family of Secrets. And then I discovered that he had all these strange things, like he couldn't remember where he was on November 22, 1963, the day that John F. Kennedy was shot. And I thought it was strange. And then I came across some declassified documents which showed that he was working for the CIA on November 22 with Cuban exiles, that he was receiving briefings about things related to the assassination, and that another document has him calling the FBI and saying, my name's George H.W. Bush, and I'm a private citizen, an oil man, and I happen to be here in Tyler, Texas, a small town, and I just wanted to say, you know, I may have some idea who shot the president. I would like to give you a name of somebody. There's a guy who can't remember where he was, and at the same time, he was calling the FBI as a private citizen to say, I might know who shot the president. By the way, that was not the right guy. And the same guy is also secretly working for the CIA, getting briefings about Cuban exiles. So you'd think this would be of some interest, and you'd think perhaps we ought to get on some shows and talk about this, because everything in Family Secrets is documented. That's how I work, all footnoted. Anyway, Watergate. Basically, it looks like Nixon was framed by the same people who went after John F. Kennedy. I know that sounds crazy, but that's all new to me. I have to say, I thought Lee Harvey Oswald shot Kennedy, and I thought Nixon was the bad guy in Watergate. But when you're a journalist or any kind of researcher, I don't care if it's scientific or whatever, you have to have an open mind. And you have to be willing to let the facts lead you wherever they lead you. And that's what I did. So a couple more things. First of all, I said I would talk a little bit about Obama. There's an article we're handing out here. It's called What Obama is Up Against. It's not intended to take sides there. It is intended to say you cannot view presidents as sole figures, great actors on the stage of history, elected, and now they do whatever they want. And if they don't do it, they're bad. Presidents are constantly terrified because just as they can't get in without huge numbers of very, very powerful people saying, okay, they can't stay in unless huge numbers of powerful people say, okay. And we've seen many presidents, bad things happen to them. Jimmy Carter, peaceably, it was kept to one term. Bill Clinton had a sexual scandal. You could say, well, that was his own doing. But why was that such a big story? And why was $100 million spent on prosecuting that? I mean, this is not, what did they spend on the 9/11 commission? What was it, $17 million? Richard Nixon basically was trying to do things that were actually angering the military-industrial complex, as Eisenhower called it. And that's, again, a few chapters in there. One thing I discovered, it really opened my eyes, was here you have, my experience, a sort of credentialed, reasonably mainstream journalist, and I can't get on any of those shows. And by the way, I haven't even been on all your favorite Comedy Central lefty show. I have not been on them. But not interesting to them. I've been on a lot of media, but it's kind of, shall we say, some lesser known, unusual shows and things like that. And we've gotten the word out, and I'm very happy to say that Family of Secrets is selling steadily and the word is getting out there. But of course, people always say, what can I do? Well, whatever it is, whether it's Family of Secrets or it's Naomi Klein's book or it's books that people here have written, something that my friend Cindy Sheehan wrote, you want to get it out there. You want to let people know about it, Colleen Rowley and so forth. Spread the word. Read, spread the word, sign up. These things really make a difference. And you're a change vector. If you, I always say, you know, people, you know, what you can do for 5 minutes in your bathrobe is amazing. Because that's how everybody learns. My mother sends me stuff I didn't know, and I read it, and I go out there, and I start blogging, and maybe I tell you about it, radio or TV or something. And so we're all very, very powerful in the information age, as long as we're still allowed and the internet is still free. So I just want to say knowledge is power. And along those lines, we've started a nonprofit organization. We have a table here about it. It's called whowhatwhy.com. It is a nonprofit, nonpartisan investigative journalism website. We hope to grow and become one of the leading sources of news. And we right now don't have any plans to have theater reviews or weather or sports or celebrity sightings or news conferences or anything like that. All we're going to do is dig. That's all we're going to do. And we're going to dig when we have the staff and the resources. Unfortunately, we're not independently wealthy, and we do have to pay our rent. And so we are reliant on donations, and we think that's the most honest way to do news instead of getting it from large advertisers. So there are places on the site where you can go and sign up to make monthly or one-time contributions. In any case, when we have the staff and resources, we will consider a broad array of subjects. And one thing I will commit to doing is that if and when we can settle on a particular and distinct aspect of unanswered questions regarding what happened on September 11, 2001, we will explore that. And whatever we find, we will report. Thank you very much.
And now here's Russ Baker being interviewed on Russia Today on January 17, 2011.
50 years ago, in 1961, Dwight D. Eisenhower warned of the negative effects of a military-industrial complex, an idea that's rarely questioned or even discussed in the media today. Let's take a listen to what he said.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
So was it a prophecy, and will things ever change in regards to the defense industry and what some dub perpetual warfare? Well, for more, author of this book right here, The Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, Russ Baker is talking to us from New York City. Russ, good to see you. So, you know, the perspective that Eisenhower seemed to warn against is this idea of quote-unquote military metaphysics, which basically paints the picture that international reality is basically military. Do you think that this kind of thinking shapes foreign policy in the U.S. today?
I don't know if the thinking shapes it, but it reflects the reality. And in fact, 50 years later, things are only much, much worse than the way that Eisenhower characterized it. And it's so interesting that he himself was a heroic military figure from World War II. What we see today is what I would call a military, industrial, intelligence, oil, media complex. It's much broader, it's much more pervasive, and now we also have this whole new area called Homeland Security, an ill-defined but vast area that takes tremendous amounts of money from the American taxpayer and also keeps us in a state of sort of low-grade panic all the time. So I think things are much, much worse. And by the way, today also is Martin Luther King Day, where we're honoring an individual who played a very important role in this country in fostering a very different set of values. He, of course, was assassinated by what was described described as a lone nut. This is the 50th anniversary of the inauguration of John F. Kennedy, assassinated by what was described as a lone nut. They also tried to tie that to blame the Soviet Union and Cuba for that. And we had this past week a number of very strange deaths of figures associated with the federal government, a congresswoman, a Democratic congresswoman, a former Pentagon official found in a trash dumpster in Delaware, a woman whose husband is top person in the Obama administration was found in her burned-out car in her garage. These are very, very troubling times. And we don't have the kind of transparency we need. We don't have any grip on this complex. We have very little understanding of how it works. And all the records remain, most of them remain classified under lock and key, so we can't figure out what went on and what's going on today.
So you're saying a lot of different entities involved, a lot of similar interests. And it's interesting that you mentioned Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. because an Obama administration official recently came out and sort of used Dr. King's legacy to say that he would actually understand the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. So I think that was pretty interesting. But, Russ, the other question that comes up is one of perpetual warfare and whether or not anything will change in that regard. Because, you know, Eisenhower himself said, quote, "This conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. It was then." He said the total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. This is probably true now more than ever when you have members of Congress investing in defense contracting companies, right? This revolving door between retired generals and the Pentagon and the defense industry. So can anything really change, again, in regards to that, considering all of this?
It can't change until the dialogue changes, and I hold the media in this country largely responsible for not being able to break us out of this cycle. We can't even discuss these things. And, for example, how ironic that the first president of the United States who was African-American happens to be someone who kept as his defense secretary Robert Gates, who had been the CIA director under the first Bush president and defense secretary under the second. We see these kind of continuities, these inevitabilities, these inabilities to break out of this, even a man like Obama, who is presented as a great reformer, finds himself unable to really do anything substantively about this cycle of doom and destruction.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, Eisenhower was a decorated general. So let's say, hypothetically, that General David Petraeus decides to run in 2012, gets the Republican nod, wins the presidency. Could he, like perhaps before him, be the only person to basically say, we have to look at this issue, we have to make drastic cuts? Or is the system too out of control as it is that even he couldn't do it?
Well, as you know from my book, Family of Secrets, there's a whole untold history of how people even become president, how they are drafted as candidates, who puts the big money into them. A person like Petraeus would be there primarily because of the attraction of his celebrity to the public. It's sort of interesting that military, again, is considered to be a proper indice of leadership. But certainly he would have behind him the same exact interest, the financial banking interest, the large industrial interests that benefit so much from this state of perpetual war. This is the largest industry this country has ever known. It's the gravy train, and they're not going to get off of it anytime soon without something drastic. I don't think there's any chance that a military man like Petraeus put into the presidential race would possibly buck that establishment.
On previous shows, you've heard James Douglas, author of JFK and the Unspeakable, lay out the evidence of who conspired to kill JFK. Then you heard attorney William Pepper, author of the book An Act of State, The Assassination of Martin Luther King, proving who was involved in that assassination conspiracy. Then you heard Russ Baker, author of Family of Secrets, The Bush Dynasty, America's Invisible Government, and the Hidden History of the Last 50 Years, talking about conspiracies that happen all the time by our invisible government, of which the Bush family is deeply involved. So these are not conspiracy theories. They are, in fact, real conspiracies. So now you're going to hear Michael Parenti, one of our leading political analysts, author of 22 books and 300-plus articles, discussing conspiracies. This speech was given at the How the World Changed After 9/11 conference on September 12, 2010, in New York City. So here's Michael Parenti.
Okay, the term conspiracy theory, that's what I want to discuss, because this term occupies really a unique place in the political lexicon. There are very few terms that are more effective in putting a foreclosure on rational discourse. There are very few terms that are more effective in blunting or thwarting political investigation. Few terms are more widespread and self-confirming in the press, in public discourse, and among ordinary citizens. Even among informed people, you get somebody who is politically literate and it's fine, and you're talking, and then suddenly he or she will say, "That you have a conspiracy theory there?" You know, you want to just stop the talk. Informed people who become knee-jerk idiots. It's a discouraging thing. This concept, conspiracy theory, is used to legitimate plutocratic policies by dismissing the critics. It's used to make the world safe for empire and corporate plunder. It's used to cover up all sorts of corruptions and departures from democratic governance. And it's used to make America safe for an empty democracy. By an empty democracy, I mean one that's diluted of any real impact and popular interest and popular power, which retains all the forms of some kind of democracy. What's interesting is that along with dismissing critical investigation by slinging the conspiracy theory label around, the opinion makers themselves are always fabricating conspiracy theories. They always are. Always. They're always doing it. They just don't call them conspiracy theories. They don't call them conspiracy theories. They call them serious problems. They call them the need to fight another war or whatever else. These fabricated conspiracies are given phony conspiracy embellishments by top policymakers and instant uncritical support from mainstream media. Not all media. There are very good working journalists like one we just heard who try to dig out things, and we depend on them more than we perhaps realize. So what we have is a conspiracy by the rulers, a conspiracy to fabricate conspiracy theories that are not called conspiracy theories. Are you still with me, any of you? Raise your hand if you are. Okay. One function of this conspiracy to fabricate conspiracy theories, phony conspiracy theories, is to cover up the real conspiracy. There are real conspiracies that happen. Let me give you a few. Example, Lockerbie bombing. They blamed Libya. Even the Scottish judges knew this guy wasn't guilty. That's why they let him free and go home and all that. It was such a weak case. It was without a shred of evidence, and it covered up all sorts of things about links to some Syrian hit gangs and CIA and all the other stuff. And it served another function, which was to advance a political goal against Gaddafi. In those days, he was hated as a reformer. He was hated as somebody who nationalized his own oil. The oil that was in the ground of his country he thought belonged to the people of Libya, when, of course, I mean, other people knew it belonged to Exxon and Mobil and all those people. So he had the audacity to do that. Another case, do you remember the Turkish fascist from the Grey Wolves who shot John Paul II? Lousy shot, he should have finished him. His name was Akra, right? Is that? Asha, pronounced Asha, right. He did 23 years, didn't he? During which time John Paul visited him and said, "He's my friend," and this and that. He was a murderer. They wanted him in Turkey. He had killed Turkish journalists and all that. Well, when they arrested him and they had the trial, they cooked up this whole story. And I got a case study of it in the first edition of Inventing Reality. I didn't put it in the second. But they said there was a Bulgarian connection. And that was another cooked-up conspiracy theory. Nobody said... I mean, nobody in the government said, "Oh, we have a conspiracy theory about this." They just said, "There's a Bulgarian connection, and the Bulgarians were behind this guy." He didn't know these people from a hole in the ground, and the Bulgarians didn't know him. And yet it was a big story. Now, what happened, I thought, was very fascinating. He was just released last year, wasn't it, the year before, and not a single word about the Bulgarian connection. I looked at every single story. They quietly took that out. They didn't need it anymore. There's no more Cold War. They no longer had to tell the American people how sinister the Bulgarians were because they were allies of the Soviets and they were communists and all that. Okay, another conspiracy theory. Here's a conspiracy theory. It's a real goofy one. A 9/11 conspiracy theory. As I told my friend Norm Solomon when he resigned from Project Censored, because he said, because Peter Phillips and Mickey Huff were coming out and saying, we got to look into 9/11 and there's things wrong and this and that. And he said, you're getting involved in conspiracy theory. I said, Norman, it's only conspiracy theory. What do you think the other side is putting out? I mean, a few days after they started telling us it was this 19 young Saudi Arabian and two Egyptian students or young men who suddenly became great master pilots and flew these planes into the... But that's a conspiracy theory. There's no lone assassin theory here, Norman. You can't say a lone assassin flew those three planes into the... And then just for good luck, he flew a fourth one into a grassy knoll. You can't say that. No lone assassin acting alone could have done all that. I don't care how good he was. Okay, there's another conspiracy theory. Other mythic conspiracies that are propagated by the ruling interests. Al-Qaeda, we are told, is an international coordinated terrorist network operating with a disciplined global chain of command to perpetrate perpetual jihad and 9/11 type catastrophes, all under the command of an old man in a cave hooked up to a dialysis machine. In Western Pakistan, of all congenial places, too. But they say he's in the cave. I read an account of this, that, what the hell is his name, Osama bin Laden, he's in this cave that has been so well dug and so deep and all, and there's a whole network of these caves. They can't find it, but they can describe it in detail, anyway. And this is why we haven't been able to catch him. Every time we get to the door, they put a big rock in the way. I tell you, kicking the ass of the ruling class can be fun at times, you know. Here's another conspiracy, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The uranium sale at Niger, where the links of Al-Qaeda to Saddam Hussein, there were no links. He didn't get along with them at all. He was a secularist. These were all put out, you see. That dog and pony show that Colin Powell put on before the UN. I mean, I sat there howling and laughing. He'd say, here's a truck. Half hour later, the truck is gone. Oh, they've got trucks in Iraq. Quick, grab our guns, our missiles. Okay. Am I carrying on too much? Do I need to be reined in a bit? Okay. The International Communist Menace, that was the grand conspiracy. There's nobody on our side who's ever confected a conspiracy theory, imaginary one, like these guys do, with almost no attention given to who was funding and organizing and linking fascist organizations in various countries. Very little on that. In the Reagan era, we had writers like Claire Sterling, who won exposure in the mainstream media, and I'm talking about op-eds in the Washington Post, New York Times, feature articles in their Sunday magazine sections and all. Claire Sterling writing about, quote, an international worldwide terrorist network with its headquarters in Moscow. All during the Reagan years, the argument was that Moscow and the communists were training terrorists to kill and all that. And they would frequently quote Lenin, who said, and this is a correct quote, the purpose of terror is to terrorize. And they'd say, you see that? Ooh. But Lenin, when he wrote that, he meant just the opposite. He said, what are you doing? We're using terror. The only thing terror does is you terrorize people. We have to organize them as a mass with a vanguard party, with an agenda, with an idea of a new society, and so forth and so on. He meant just the opposite. You can look at his book. I know he said he meant just the opposite because he wrote it all down in a book called Left Communism and Infantile Disorder. I mean, he very much talked all the time about making coalitions, even with groups you're not very happy about and all that. Let's us remember that as we keep schisming over one little issue or another little thing, you know. So, but that just shows you how they lie to you, even quoting Lenin the wrong way and repeating the quote again and again, and then it becomes ironclad. Aside from fabricating conspiracy theories, the power that be perpetrate actual conspiracies, not occasionally, but constantly, the stuff behind the curtain that Joe's talking about. If we define conspiracy as they do, as criminal secret collusion with forethought and planned intent, there are conspiracies throughout the polity. There's the conspiracies piled on with conspiracies of drug trafficking that Peter Dale Scott has written so much about so well. There are conspiracies of stolen elections that Mark Crispin Miller has written about also so well and in abundance. There are the conspiracies of the financial world. There's the conspiracies of the Federal Reserve. There's the conspiracies of $80 billion being given to and $2 trillion unexplained as to where it went and all that. There's the conspiracies, real-life conspiracies of the saving and loans scandal. U.S. Justice Department prosecutor, quote him, 1,000 conspiracies, most of which we will never be able to prosecute. Hedge fund conspiracies, tax haven conspiracies, every municipality, county, and state government in this country, many federal agencies, payoffs, kickbacks, development contracts, safety inspection violations, money laundering. This whole society is filled with plutocrats, corporations, policymakers, operators, swindlers who collude in secrecy at the shadowy edge of the law. Let me show you how apparent some of this is. For example, George Bush's behavior after 9/11. Now, I'm not an inside investigator like Colleen Raleigh or Annie Mitchin, who were right there and put their careers and their lives on the line. I'm sitting in my bathrobe burning my breakfast toast and listening to radio. I'm telling you how easy it is, how public it is, and I listen to what George Bush is doing. I discovered that he committed 7 acts of cover-up after 9/11. We're not talking about chemicals in the steel beams or anything like that. George Bush, number one, Bush refused to appoint an investigating commission for 1.5 years. Nobody's done that. The commissions are always appointed within a month, a week, or a couple of weeks, or whatever. He did not want to appoint. He did not. That's an act of cover-up, the refusal to appoint a commission to investigate. Second one, he appointed Henry Kissinger to head it. That's an act of cover-up. I mean, Kissinger built his career on duplicity and cover-up and secrecy and serving the ruling interests in that way. After the outcry, he got rid of Kissinger. 3, Bush refused to appear before the commission. And he never did. He never did appear before the commission. That's an act of cover-up, non-cooperation. What do you got to hide? 4, he agreed to appear only before the 2 co-chairmen, Keene and Hamilton. 5, he insisted it be in camera, that is, in a closed room, behind closed doors. It would never be publicized. 6, he refused to be put under oath. 7, he would not allow a transcript or a record be kept of what he said. What's going on? What is this about, then? What did he have to hide? Bush himself at the UN, 2 months after 9/11, introduced the issue of conspiracy theory and used the term, quote, "Let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks on September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty." We're not trying to shift the blame away from the terrorists. We want to point to who are the terrorists. We don't want to shift away from the guilty. Let me repeat, this whole society, the agents of the national security state, elements in the military and in Congress, mainstream media owners and top officials, educators and scholars who are secretly recruited, they conspire to hide their conspiracies. They denounce at every turn conspiracy theories while perpetrating conspiracy realities, colluding in secrecy for unlawful or immoral ends, the very definition of conspiracy. And at the same time, they keep promising transparency, an end to underhanded secrecy. That too is a lie. They never give us transparency. They can't function if they did, and that's why we are here to shed light where there is darkness. That's not conspiracy theory. That's called democracy. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
And again, that was Michael Parenti at the How the World Changed After 9/11 conference on September 12, 2010 in New York City. And I want to thank Lenny Charles and all the people at INN World Reports for putting on that conference and for making the speeches available. And I'd like to thank David Schoenfeld at WWUH for extracting the audio from the DVD so that you could hear that speech today. And I also want to thank Ken Doust, producer of the show New World Notes, for posting my shows on the website radioforall.net. And now I want to tell you about the new date for our snowed out movie night on January 26th. The movie Deceptions will now be shown on Thursday, March 3rd at 7 p.m. in the Wild Auditorium on the campus of the University of Hartford. The film producer, Chris Pratt, will be joining us for a post-movie discussion. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.